Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Yud Be'elul, Parashas Kisetse, Tavshinayin Dallas, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 4 September 2014, webcasting from the center battleground between good and evil. The people of the book and the people who came up with the nickname People of the Book. In the original Arabic, the Jews were called Al-Kitab. Kitab is book in Arabic. Same Hebrew root for anything written, like the Hebrew word for the marriage contract, a ksuba or ketuba in Israeli Hebrew. It was the Arabs who called the Jews the people of the book, likely in amazement at the existence of a people where writing and reading was not the magical skill of a court recorder or scribe. For ages, leaders of peoples did not have to know how to read and write, no more than today's CEO knows how to or has to know how to write a computer program that his company uses, or the apps. By the time the Arabs had their first book, the Quran, it was in the late 7th century of the Common Era, which means 1,937 years after the Jews got their first book, or first five books at Mount Sinai. It also means that this was 1,000 years after the canon of the Tanakh, the tripartite Hebrew Bible, had been closed. It was some 440 years after the Mishnah commentary was completed, about the year 200 by Yehuda Nasi, Judah the Prince. It was more than a century after the 18-volume Babylonian Talmud was completed. Further commentary and discussion, written in Jewish Aramaic, discussing the biblical text of the Hebrew Tanakh and the Mishnaic Hebrew commentary, plus a generous sprinkling of words in Greek and Latin and Arabic and Farsi, I think, which students of the Talmud were familiar with. The Jews were literate in numerous languages. For almost 2,000 years before the rise of Islam, the Jews were reading and writing and living according to laws in a book, while the sons of Ishmael were still everywhere in the Arabian Peninsula, illiterate nomads living according to oral traditions and the whims of a tribal chieftain who looked upon the Jews in astonishment. Here was an entire people, not just writing specialists, who could read and write and live by laws written in a book. And I want to know, why was it that the sons of Israel became literate when they did? But for the next 2,000 years, the seed of Yitzchak's half-brother Ishmael did not. I don't know why, but it did happen that way. And why was it that in Europe, post-Columbus, society began a long process of moving from absolute monarchy to constitutional monarchy toward democracy? The 18th century was called by historian R.R. Palmer the Age of Democratic Revolution. For sure, the vanguard of this evolutionary process in the 18th century was the United States, which was the first of the democratic revolutions in 1776, a rebellion that was twofold, independence from London and a new kind of government. In 1789, the French began their revolution, very different from America's, but also ultimately toward democracy. In these decades, there were democratic movements in Poland and Holland and Switzerland and elsewhere in Europe. And again, I want to know why none of this democratic movement transpired in Araby. Thomas Jefferson, who was there in Paris in 1789, in the middle of the French Revolution, as U.S. ambassador, as an observer to the revolution, was actively, on a daily basis, still working as ambassador and handling a hostage crisis in Algiers, then in its fourth year, when American merchant seamen had not only been captured by the Muslims of that walled port city, but enslaved by them. And Jefferson, too, puzzled over the gap between European civilization and life in the North Africa, that gave him a headache every day of his time as ambassador in Paris. 5 years, he never succeeded in that period in getting those hostages released. Why, he wondered, had Europe developed one way and Islam another way? In Jefferson's day, a major player as well on the global stage was the Ottoman Empire, where the Sultan in Constantinople had a harem of like 1,500 women tended by African slaves that had been captured and castrated. Turkey was also known in the world for its degenerate and corrupt culture, and Jefferson seems to have regarded Islam in general pretty much the way Winston Churchill would, a century later, with utter disdain, contempt and revulsion. Churchill said it was the most retrograde force in the world, which conclusion he came to based on his own first-hand experience in today's Taliban country of Waziristan in the 1890s, fighting as an officer in the British Army against the same Muslims the West has confronted in our time. Later he was supposed to Sudan and fought the Muslims there as well, wrote a book about each assignment. Jefferson, an 18th century, not a 21st century liberal, one of the time's pioneering thinkers, had no political correctness to fight off when he, too, was disgusted by Islam. He was the number one hawk for war with Islam for 17 years before he became president. Among his first acts was sending a squadron of warships to the Barbary Coast to take violent action against the Muslims there, who had been a menace to the U.S. From its legal independence. Jefferson was a disillusioned post-Christian, but surely he was rational enough to recognize that his own rejection, notwithstanding, surely in history, accounting for the radically different societies, was the different nature of Christianity versus Islam. Christianity, by embracing the Tanakh, embraced Jewish morality, while the Muslims stole and twisted and corrupted the Tanakh, and boy does that show. I too want to know why today, among the dominant religions in the world, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, why is it that only one of them has produced devotees of head chopping, like what just happened to another American journalist like James Foley? Only this one, like yours truly, a dual citizen of the U.S. and Israel. Poor Stephen Joel Sutcliffe. Just like Foley, just like Daniel Pearl, like those four Arabs in the Sinai beheaded last week, all of them victims of arguably the human animal at its worst, lowest, most evil incarnation. And it's not only these individual agents of Satan who do the actual beheading who are evil. No less are the leaders of every Muslim country who have not opened their mouths to protest this horrific behavior. And they are joined in this evil by every Muslim preacher, in particular the heads of Al-Azhar Seminary in Cairo and the head of the Grand Mosque in Mecca. Their silence screams out their own evil. And of course, the two-headed leadership of Hamas, Mashal and Hanya, they too are silent. And Nasrallah is the head of Hezbollah. Islam as a whole, not just the so-called extremists, are guilty for these horrible beheadings. Charles Krauthammer yesterday took note of how Obama, even in his bravado declaration of wanting to destroy ISIS, refuses to call them Islamic extremists. He just calls them extremists, which Krauthammer said was really odd, since they themselves in ISIS proclaim they are Islamic. And now there is the fear that 11 jetliners have been stolen in Libya in the fighting there, and they could be used next week on the anniversary of 9/11, God forbid, like the way Benghazi, the fiasco there 2 years ago, was on 9/11, used to celebrate and commemorate a victory for the evil that God told man in the Garden of Eden about, the evil they were to reject. Adam and Eve ate from the tree of knowledge, and what was the first bit of knowledge they downloaded? They were told, now you know the difference between good and evil, and they're not the same. There's no moral equivalence. While we live in an age of non-judgmentalism, which has been camouflage for the acceptance of what in the past had been unacceptable. And I say it's no coincidence that in the very same satanic year of 1969, the Palestinians were born at the UN, man landed on the moon, and sodomy came out of the closet, demanding to be called good, making the case for moral equivalence between normal mammalian behavior called procreation, which takes place between the male and the female of the species, and a kind of pseudo-joining of two human beings between two males. No difference, say the enlightened. Both are good. 1969, the process began of sprinkling holy water as well on Arab terrorists who had been bleeding Jews for, at that point, a half century of renewing national life in the Holy Land. The Arabs had been murdering Zionist Jews at least since the League of Nations mandate called into existence a Palestine that had never existed under Muslim rule. Only after the Six-Day War The vocabulary underwent a serious renovation, which transformed these terrorists into freedom fighters.
Shabbat Mekabela Shamo Vezacho Bedibur Echad Yishmi'anu El HaMeyuchad Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad Lashem Ul Tiferet Velitila Lechad Mikdash Melech Ir Melucha Umitzei Mitocha Hafecha Rav Lach Shevet Beemek Havacha Hu Echmol Alayich Chema
Yeah, the top story in Israel today was finding out that American journalist Stephen Joel Sotloff was also an Israeli citizen who had done master's level work at the Interdisciplinary Center in Netanya. He was a hero, evidently, who on Yom Kippur, in the middle of his terrible captivity, fasted. The top story was again, I guess, about the unpleasant reality that there are Muslims like this out there, like his demonic murderer, for whom religion is not a civilizing system, but justifies men at their worst. We also found out yesterday that most Gazans think that Israel was painfully beaten by Hamas last month, which tells us that they are either living in a delirium, in total denial of the wreckage all around them, hundreds of thousands homeless now, while Israel is not in a similar state of destruction, or they are a nation of slaves to the terror they suffer from their own. I mean, if I were an Arab in Gaza and was asked by a polling organization what I thought of the last month, I would only say, way to go, Hamas, you really did a great job on Al-Yahud. To say the opposite, to criticize Hamas for bringing on the vast destruction in Gaza and the death of hundreds, maybe thousands, is to risk being murdered by Hamas. Then again, yesterday, a separate Palestinian polling operation reported that if elections were held today among the Arabs in Gaza, in the rectangle, and in Judea and Samaria, Hamas would win over Fatah 2-1. J-Post reported, quote, most Palestinians surveyed said they prefer Hamas's strategy of armed struggle against Israel rather than peace negotiations, which are favored by Fatah, close quote. Yeah, I think it's always been this way. More than political talks and negotiations about statehood, they're just interested in the armed struggle, which is a euphemism for murdering Jews. This is why in 2006, Hamas won the election and took not two-thirds, but three-quarters of the seats in the assembly. And that's because none of these Palestinians, Fatah Hamas, have spent 2 minutes of their lives dreaming about how great it's going to be when they have their own state. They don't care about having a state. Anti-Jew feeling is forever coursing through their culture, and that is why they prefer the armed struggle, this euphemism for murdering people. Armed struggle is their term for what civilized peoples call terrorism. Indeed, it's why, among other things, Oslo, the process, was an abomination from the conceptual get-go. Oslo rested upon the belief that Arafat and company had finally sworn off terrorism, when that was never true, because, for starters, these barbarians really don't understand what civilized people have in mind when they use the term terrorism. In fact, in 1974, when Arafat addressed the United Nations General Assembly, he made perfectly clear in his speech, it's in my book, that his definition of terrorism referred to the intentions of those who commit violent acts. And he declared that in a conflict, the cause of the individual, if it's just, well, his violence is just. In Arafat's universe, Fatah's freedom fighters never commit acts of terror. Only Israeli soldiers do when they try to prevent freedom fighters from their freedom fighting. For example, at Maalot, when the Arabs that year took dozens of school kids, Jewish kids, hostage and demanded the release of brother terrorists in Israeli prisons, that was freedom fighting. And when the IDF tried to free the children and killed the freedom fighters, who managed to kill 24 of the kids, the IDF were the terrorists. This is what I had in mind in the first segment about the lunatic 1960s, and especially its last lunatic year of 1969, the inversion of values, the making acceptable what was unacceptable. J-Post's Khaled Abu Tome on Tuesday also cited a Hezbollah newspaper writing up the rising hatred between Fatah and Hamas, you know, those two fraternal organizations locked in eternal combat, who in April said they had come together in holy, or was it unholy, matrimony. Abu Tome reported that Abbas complained in his visit to Qatar to the prince there, the emir, about the coup Hamas had been plotting against him last month, uncovered by Israeli intelligence, which Fatah responded to by arresting dozens more Hamas guys in Judea and Samaria. Abbas also told the emir about how in 2006 Hamas had tried to assassinate him. Whacking people, especially business rivals, is not considered immoral. It's just the way things are. Abbas was reported to have complained to the emir in Qatar that Hamas has been trying to bring down the PA since its inception in 1994. In 1996, Arafat asked Hamas to join the PA, but Hamas said that this is a democracy-style arrangement, when as Muslims, they don't use democracy. And that's the vox populi, the voice of the people. They have Sharia law, and that is administered by Muslim priests. But don't tell this to Tzipi Livni and Yair Lapid and John Kerry and all the other heads of states and their foreign ministers in Europe. They dream of a state of Balazdine that will arise as the ancient ones desire, with no Jews on it, After all, the Jews have been driven from their homes in the West Bank, and it will be a peaceful, democratic, cooperative neighbor to Israel, cheek by jowl with the state of the Jews. This is the dream that drives enlightened foreign policy people on display this week in the multiple complaints of European governments and the U.S. government and the U.N. and Ambassadress Samantha Power, all of them calling on Israel to rescind its proclaimed desire to build homes for Jews in Judea's barren land. New community. What a terrible decision the Jews' government have made, they all said, so counterproductive to realizing the two-state solution dream. Yeah. Sure.
חשב לעצמו לבד, אז הוא נפל. אדם מדמיין לעצמו בתוך הגן, הוא שכח. ואמר המשחק הזה קל, הצייר לי מגדל, הצייר גם נשאר גם נחש, הצייר לי נופים, הציונות מוטרפים, הצייר לי גם בגד חדש. המשחק הזה טוב, כן הוא טוב טוב מאוד, הוא נותן לי לפתע תחושה שאני כה גדול ויכול על הכל, ואפילו גם יש לי בושה. אדם מסתבך עם עצמו בתוך הגן, הוא שמע איזה קול מדבר, אז הוא נבהל ואמר המשחק לא משחק, המגדל כבר נפל, הלוואי לא היה כאן נחש. ועם כל הבושה נגמרה התחושה, אני סתם מצוב רח ומותש. המשחק התעוות ואני מתחרט, לא רוצה כבר להיות אלוהים, לא רוצה לא נחש ולא בגד חדש, גם אם יש בו את כל הצבעים. צייר לי מגדל, צייר גם אישה גם נחש, צייר לי נופים, הזיונות מוטרפים, צייר לי גם בגד חדש. המשחק התעוות ואני מתחרט, לא רוצה כבר להיות אלוהים, לא רוצה לא נחש ולא בגד חדש, גם אם יש בו את כל הצבעים.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Yeah, the decision to build a new community in Judea on ownerless, barren land just over the 1949 ceasefire line has drawn the chronic response from the world community, which rests upon the conventional morality according to which the Jews, unique in the world, are a people who are not entitled to keep the spoils of war. What they took in admitted self-defense in 1967 during an attempt by the sons of Ishmael to kill lots of them, steal all the wealth they had created over a century to bring the land back to life, destroy their independence, the Jews have to give it back and basically let the Arabians have another crack at them, at succeeding a third time in their drive to destroy the Jewish state. Put another way, for the Arabs' aggression in 1967, there's no penalty. They aggressed against the Jews, in an attempt to steal Jewish-owned and developed real estate. The Jews defended, took away land from the aggressors, but now the Jews must return what they took. And never mind that in the intervening almost half century, the Jews have invested even more billions in infrastructure, homes, towns, factories, medical clinics, synagogues, community centers, swimming pools, roads and gas stations, an electrical grid, cell phone towers. The Jews must vacate Judea and Samaria and turn it all over to its legitimate owners. This is the politically correct opinion in Washington, New York, London, Paris, Geneva, Japan, and etc. And yours truly awaits the day when an Israeli leader tells the world that this policy proposal, this so-called two-state solution, is a fantasy, and it's really nothing but ageless Jew hatred in disguise. As we were told for thousands of years by Christians and Muslims, where we could and could not live, in which slum we had to live, or ghetto, what nice area we could call homeland that we brought back to life. This subliminal principle about Jews not being allowed to keep the spoils of war is nothing but age-old discrimination, persecution, injustice. This invention of a Palestinian nation, likewise nothing but ageless anti-Jewism in disguise. Likewise, the news story today of Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday bowing to Jordan's demand that the new bridge built to serve non-Muslims wanting to ascend the Temple Mount must be undone. Haaretz headline, quote, Amman warns that the structure would spark a diplomatic crisis, close quote, and apparently the prime minister, presumably in consultation with military and Mossad intelligence, decided to cooperate with Amman, do as asked, which Israel has since 1967, that is, recognized the authority for Islam on the mount as Jordan, and never the locals, never the PLO. M.K. Moshe Feiglin and others, of course, objected bitterly, and all self-respecting Jews must be upset by this news. But again, yours truly refrains from personal attacks on Bibi as a coward or corrupt. Also in the news today, in a related story, is the arrest of scores of Islamists in Jordan, ISIF types, I think. Even I get confused about all these groups. And that situation surely played a significant part in Bibi's decision. Namely, Jordan likely told Israel, rule is fragile. And that's long been known. The country is infested, like all Arab countries, with jihadis who would be only too happy to bring King Abdullah down and take over the country. And again, I say, in this situation in which we Jews are denied access to our holiest site, we still can make political capital of this reality, saying that at bottom, the Arab desire to destroy Israel is a religious quest. Sovereignty over the Temple Mount is evidence that Temple Mount is the nuclear core of the conflict, which has always been religious, which over the last generation has been covered up by the myth of Palestinian freedom fighters, a tale worthy of 1001 Nights, the tale that the ancient ones had their entire ancient homeland stolen from them by the Jews. So the Prime Minister's decision yesterday to accede to Jordan's request that it dismantle this bridge is saddening. But on the other hand, it is further ammunition against the fools of the left, like Livni and Kerry and the Europeans, who continue to believe this conflict is all about the injustice done to the ancient ones and how Israel has to hand over the West Bank, for that will mean peace in our time. Yeah, right.
מי שרוצה לשוב להשם יתברך צריך להיות בקי בהליכה שלא יפיל אותו שום דבר בעולם בין בעלייה ובין בירידה כל מה שעובר עליו יחזק את עצמו אוי, יחזק את עצמו ויקיים ממשק שמיים שם אתה. אוי, להציע שאול, הנה כאן.
Last item, J-Post reported today on an Egyptian TV interview with former Foreign Minister Ismail Fahmy, who said relations with the U.S. remain strained because the U.S. is still insisting that the Muslim Brotherhood be included in the political process instead of its having been ruled an illegal terrorist organization last December. He said the Americans have not yet appropriately learned the lesson of dealing with terrorism. He said the Americans had contacted the Egyptian government constantly in order to integrate political Islam into the political process, close quote. This is an extraordinary statement. Boy, how far the U.S. has come since the days of Thomas Jefferson, the great radical philosopher of democracy, father of American liberalism, who coined the expression a wall of separation between church and state, who was simultaneously most hostile to Islam, versus the current democratic liberal occupant of the Oval Office who wants Islam involved in Egypt's government. It's also an extraordinary statement for being further evidence of Barack Hussein Obama's un-American values, which helps to explain his anti-American policies. When, oh when, is this guy going to be yanked from office? Okay, that's it for this week, and I'll be back on Willing on Sunday. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Me'eretz Yisrael.